pressure. Won't give up. We'll always fight oppression. But we just need one night off to apply that good pressure.
You're tuned in to Typically Tuesdays on CJSF 90.1 FM. We're the campus community radio station on top of Burnaby Mountain at Simon Fraser University, where we are broadcasting on the unceded territories of the Squamish, Musqueam, Tsleil-Waututh, Stolo, and Coquitlam First Nations. This episode of Typically Tuesdays was produced on the unceded territories of the Catsey, Coquitlam, and Stolo First Nations, colonially known as Port Coquitlam. Typically Tuesday streams online at cjsf.ca. Find our archived episodes on that website. You can also follow CJSF online on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, YouTube, and Instagram by looking up CJSF Radio. And don't forget to follow Typically Tuesdays on Instagram. We are at Typically Tuesdays. At the intersection of queerness and history, there is yearning. My name is Leslie.
I'm the first man to never go to space. I'm Jade.
Do you have any regrets about not going to space?
I mean, everyone's there already, so I'm just chilling here on Earth.
Cool. Okay. You sound very nonchalant about it, which...
Yeah. It's chill. It's just me on Earth. Everyone else is in space, so I have the whole planet to myself.
That is true. That is true. I do miss you.
Well, that's fine. We can just Zoom call.
Yeah. Thank God.
The internet works surprisingly well outside of Earth.
Yeah. We set up like a lot of cell towers. Is that what they are? Wi-Fi towers?
I don't know. Something like that. Mm-hmm. Satellites. Mm-hmm. Satellites are in space, right?
One would assume. If they've landed on Earth, that's really bad news for you, though.
I mean, it's not really bad news for me since I'm the only person left on Earth, so it statistically will probably land somewhere else.
That's true. Okay, cool. How are things on Earth?
Things are fine. Things are extremely warm, so actually, they're maybe not fine. I'm not having fun. Maybe I should, like, move... Some are colder.
Mm-hmm. Are the polar ice caps still melting on Earth? Yeah. I wouldn't know.
I mean, they're chilling. Mm-hmm.
Great. Just chilling. Big chilling on the polar ice caps. So today's episode, on that topic, we are talking about Soviet Wave, which is... very exciting. This is an episode that we've been wanting to do for a long time. And we have done a fairly extensive amount of research, lots of reading, lots of watching, listening.
Lots of yearning.
We're just very excited to be talking about that today. And so this is going to be an information-packed show. Also, music-packed show.
Just coming out there with lots of cold, hard facts and opinions. Cold, hard opinions about Soviet Wave.
Mm-hmm. Nothing spicy, nothing too hot.
Yeah.
It's Would chill. You like to... It is chill. Would you like to talk about the playlist and also introduce our first song?
Yeah, so the playlist is Soviet Wave, as is the theme of this episode. So we're starting off with some very the Weberian ideal type of Soviet Wave music. So this is like the most representative, I think, of the subgenre. So there's lots of like synth wave, lots of like samples. And then we're going to move on a little bit after to just sort of a sampling of post-Soviet underground music. So there's going to be more post-punk, some synth rock, new wave music. Some of it is also from the 80s and 90s. So yeah, it's going to be some good stuff. I'm going to get a pretty healthy representative-ish sample of what we're talking about. So to start off, is Time to Tell the Truth by Be Smooth.
Мы обещаем положить конец кровопролитию, объявить беспощадную войну уголовному миру, положить конец произволу расхитителей народного добра. Спасение в наших собственных руках.
Передаем сигналы точного времени. Начало шестого сигнала соответствует 15 часам московского времени.
Говорит Москва. столице 15 часов, в Ашхабаде 17, в Караганде 18, в Красноярске 19, в Иркутске 20, в Чите 21, в Хабаровске, Владивостоке 22, в Южно-Сахалинске 23 часа, в Петропавловске на Камчатке полночь.
Ашхабаде 17, в Караганде 18, в Красноярске 19, This is Bird Note. As a kid, science writer Ryan Mandelbaum avoided birds, thinking they were gross and kind of scary. But when working on an environmental project in journalism school, Ryan had a change of heart.
I just came across a story about how the New York City Audubon Society was painting lawn flamingos white to try and attract great egrets back to an island off the coast of Staten Island. And I just thought this was so funny, and I had to learn more.
That led to a video project and a quest to capture footage of a great blue heron, a bird that Ryan had never seen before, which was actually hard to find for a totally novice birder. But after a lot of trial and error, and with some help from the New York City Parks Department, they found one.
Just seeing this bird emerge from its nest, it was so much bigger than I thought it was going to be, and it was so much more majestic and beautiful than I thought it was going to be. And it was just this mind-blowing experience, like, oh my God, like, this bird lives in New York City.
Now, Ryan and their spouse go birding all the time, planning vacations around what birds they might see. Finches have taken the top spot as Ryan's favorite birds, but the heron has not been forgotten.
Great blue herons still evoke a sense of like excitement and almost nostalgia for my earlier days going birding.
For Bird Note, I'm Mark Bramhill.
Welcome back to Typically Tuesdays. You just heard Rocket Race to the Future, again, by B-Smooth, and before that, Time, by Arteca Electronica. My name is Jade.
My name is Leslie. Today we are talking about Soviet Wave, and we're listening to Soviet Wave music. Now, just before we had our music segment, we never introduced what Soviet Wave was. So now is a great time to talk about what it is. So here's my understanding of what Soviet Wave is. It's a subgenre of EDM, and it might be like a branch of synthwave that's specifically produced to evoke a sense of yearning for the Soviet era. And it makes a lot of usage of synthesizers, darker, dreamier melodies, and often uses audio clips from the Soviet era, films, political speeches, radio programming, and cartoons. Am I in the ballpark here?
Yeah, I would say that's pretty accurate. When was the first time you heard a Soviet Wave?
When you proposed this episode, I think.
Nice.
Yeah, so, I didn't know much about it. What about you?
I wasn't very familiar with Soviet Wave before this. I have heard of it. So the first time I heard of Soviet Wave was maybe like a couple of years ago. I don't even remember what the context is. Maybe I was sharing some Soviet music. It happened on Instagram. And one of my friends, Nikita, he messaged me and replied something like, oh, have you ever heard of Soviet Wave? It's really interesting. And I kind of looked it up. I looked at some playlists. I didn't really listen to any of the music. And I was like, huh, this sounds cool. I'll keep it on the back burner. Fast forward a year later. So I never thought about it during this entire time. A year later, I was up all night. I was going through a phase on YouTube where I was listening to a lot of playlist compilations, like a lot of indie music. There was like some like retrowave, a lot of city pop, and this like one very mysterious playlist that's like maybe 3 hours long popped up, and it had to do with space, and I'm always fascinated with space, so I clicked on it. It was probably said something like "To the Stars, Soviet Futures," very evocative and a strong messaging, and I was kind of obsessed. The music is pretty synthy, so it's not something I listened to a lot on my downtime, but I was really really obsessed and really enthralled by the aesthetic, and more so I was really like fascinated and intrigued by the comment section, which was filled with people who were not Russian. They did not come from a former Soviet country. They didn't speak any Russian. They were teenagers in the West, were in the Americas in particular, talking about how much they wanted to like live in the Soviet Union and see the first man go to space, as if this was something that they have personal experience with. So that was very fascinating. And that kind of made me want to dig a little deeper into this phenomenon and how nostalgia works through music and sort of the aesthetics of politics and history. So lots of interesting elements.
Mm-hmm. I actually did not know that a lot of people from the West were, I guess, living vicariously through it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that's the one thing that really, you can't quantitatively say how many of the people listening to this are from the West versus how many are Russian or former Soviet. But I think it's an interesting phenomenon. And I think it's a phenomenon in a genealogy of phenomena of like a Western gaze into Russia, and not just Soviet Russia, but Imperial Russia and the Slavic states that preceded that. The phenomenon of Westerners being intrigued with Russia is by no means a new thing. There's a lot at play historically, to do with the geography and the climate and the history of Russia. And if you know even a little bit more of that, you know that it's tinged with some aspect of Orientalism, with Russia being this quote unquote, you know, Oriental-esque Eurasian country where East meets West. And with that comes from a lot of race science and racialization regarding Slavic people, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a whole can of worms that we don't really have the time to unpack here. But you get the picture. Westerners, everybody think about Russia and Russian culture a lot throughout history. In recent years, with the internet age, before the surge in Soviet wave, so I would say this is like earlier Y2K, there's been a lot of people who are obsessed with Russian and Eastern European, I would say, things that can be classified in some way as subcultures within a class context. So lots of like Eastern European street culture and street faction, underground music scenes, punk culture, delinquency, crime, prison culture, hip hop, rap, and then these like poverty, porny looks and photographs at these derelict gray buildings and derelict gray skies and gray everything. You know, Chernobyl, nuclear disaster, the Slav squat, vodka, Russian bears, Soviet Russia jokes, Russian women, crime, the winter, the weather, class stratification, et cetera, et cetera. So
tattoo,
yeah. Russian prison tattoos and also tattoo the group. So Soviet wave is really just one point in a long genealogical line, so to speak. But I think what Soviet wave is really interesting because it's a little bit different from all these previous Western gazes into Russia. It's not ironic. It's not doom and gloom. And it's not, you know, voyeurism about Eastern European poverty or conflict or instability or even Eastern European materialism after the collapse of the Soviet Union, for that matter. Sure, yeah, there's a sense of existentialism and of melancholy in the music, but that goes hand in hand with like evoking something more optimistic and almost dreamlike, sort of the space age, Soviet futurism, the idea and the promise of a utopia for all, which on that point I want to note is very different from something like vaporwave, which also does evoke the feeling of nostalgia and of utopia, but more so in like a very opulent consumerist sense of like, say, looking at retro ads, retro products and these spaces of consumption, you know, cruising along Miami on a highway,
Coca-Cola,
shopping centers, strip malls, you know, giant palm trees, stuff like that. And sure, Soviet wave is, you know, about the Soviet Union, and musicians often sample Soviet propaganda, political speeches, lots of propaganda art, and I'm sure many listeners who from the West are leftists, and the reason why they want to listen to this music is because they want to see the Soviet Union come back. But it's also not like socialist music, like as in, you know, three-hour playlists of the Red Army singing, right? And there's lots of that on YouTube as well.
Yeah.
So I'm sure there's like a little bit of overlap in terms of listenership, but it's not, you know, quote unquote socialist music. And the people who are making the music, like the people from the former Soviet Union, for the most part, I would say probably like 90% of them are not advocating for Marxist-Leninism or anything like that. So it's a very interesting subgenre. It's political, but it's also apolitical. And as someone looking in, it doesn't feel as like the culture around it, it doesn't feel as like exploitative and like poverty porny, if that makes sense, for like a lot of other Western gazes into Russia. If anything, it's glory porny. Like it's like returning to the height of the space race. It's celebrating, you know, the first man in space, exciting days of building a nation on these utopian ideas, et cetera. It builds definitely on sentimentality for sure, but it also does it without being very kitschy, which I think is one of the reasons why people are so attracted to it.
One of the things that really stood out to me when I was doing the research for this episode was this insistence by, I think, some people who run a pretty prominent Soviet Wave online community or like a forum or something, being very adamant in saying that the intention behind the subgenre of music is not meant to be political.
Yeah.
And that I heard, there was this one quote by, I think, a moderator on one of those forums. And he said something to the extent of like, could very well be that some people of the older generation who lived through the Soviet Union and have very strong memories of it want that kind of return to that political system. But for the younger generation, we have no interest in that.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. Off air, you were talking about like how they were saying like, oh, it's not about nation, it's not about country, it's about, you know, wanting to like go back to grandma's house and like, you know, having fun on like Children's Day and stuff like that, which in some way in kind of reminded me of this like Ursula Le Guin quote, and I don't remember, I'm just kind of paraphrasing it, where she was talking about like, I don't love my nation. I don't love my country. I have no like love for like patriotism or nationalism. What I do love is like my house on this hill and the trees around it and the people in my community. So it's kind of like that. It's almost like accidental anarchism. but yeah, it's really interesting. When I was putting together the playlist too, there's not a big sample of it on Spotify, and I was using primarily Spotify sources, but I did find like the Soviet Wave Radio Collective, where they had a playlist that was called something like The New International. And I think that's kind of what Soviet Wave is. It's like a new like internationalist movement without borders, but definitely beyond borders.
Especially with the internet, I guess.
Yeah. But let's play some other music. Let's play some more less Soviet wavy music, but still sort of post, quote unquote, post-Soviet underground music in former Soviet countries. And we'll play some, and then we'll talk a little bit about this idea of a post-Soviet subject. So coming up is Stars by Molchidoma. Enjoy. We'll be right back.
света мне подскажет никто. И больше, чем солнце, и больше далекой звезды.
здесь до конца. Наши сердца ждут повод, чтоб не стучать впустую, не биться зря. Взгляд без надежд, каждый твой день, глупый напрасный труд. Мы не будем так жить, нам плевать, что здесь говорят.
За зимою вечное лето, лето, ночь темнее перед рассветом. Лето, ночь темнее перед рассветом.
Для трусов и дураков. Счастья не жди, сдохнут вожди. Самый простой урок. Не лги себе, слушай сердце и будь таков.
When it comes to nests, common sense would suggest that if you're a big bird, you build a big one. A small bird, a small one. But in fact, some species of smaller birds build large nests. None, though, build anything like the huge communal structures of sociable weavers in southern Africa's arid plains. These house sparrow-sized birds often live in accommodations with room for up to 500 birds. Made from stiff grass, they're relatively cool during the intensely hot day and relatively warm during the very cold night. A colony is made up of hundreds of individual nests clumped together. Attached to acacia trees or utility poles, they look like haystacks suspended above the earth. Each pair or family of sociable weavers has its own access hole and tunnel into a chamber within the larger complex. Some structures have persisted for more than 100 years, with constant occupation by succeeding generations of sociable weavers. One drawback of these nest structures, though, is the weight, up to a ton when dry, even more when wet. They're so heavy, they can break their supporting branches and go crashing to the earth below. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
Welcome back to Typically Tuesdays. You just heard Lena by Tigers, and before that, A Friend by Trugd. I'm Jade.
My name is Leslie. Today we are talking about Soviet Wave, which is a subgenre of EDM and maybe a branch of synthwave, utilizing a lot of synthesizers, dreamier, almost darker melodies, and using lots of sampling from Soviet era creative property. And we are now talking about kind of the idea of the quote unquote post-Soviet. What are your initial thoughts about like this term post-Soviet?
So it's interesting because I know a lot of people that really enjoy this identification, especially people in the diaspora whose families maybe moved away from the Soviet Union in the 80s and 90s, or if they grew up in former Soviet countries in the 90s and then immigrated to the West, to North America, who really, it's a bit of like a diasporic identity. But the label in general of post-Soviet, I've always found it a little bit problematic in some ways that it's used. It's a bit of a fraught signifier in that it's always technically true. You can technically call anything that happened after the collapse of the USSR as post-Soviet. And media outlets, especially Western ones, and in my experience, especially ones that focus on, say, art and design and fashion, they really constantly use this term to refer to any creative work that's coming out of former Soviet countries. So it's a label that sticks, but it's kind of a strange one because it's technically true, but in the way that technically anything that happened after the Russian Revolution up to today in Russia is quote unquote post-Tsarist Russia. But it's a designation that isn't always clear or useful or have any sort of political utility. There are some Russian creatives and other post-Soviet, former Soviet creatives, like the designer Gosha Rubchinsky or the people behind the brand Vetements, who are largely credited with popularizing Russian and Soviet aesthetics in street fashion in the West. And they think it's kind of a cliche. So Gosha thinks that, so because the press doesn't really know what's happening in these former Soviet Union countries and they can't be bothered to find out because it's like this always constant looming, you know, other, and they don't really care like about the complex like social and daily lives of the people living in these countries. So it's easier to just put in the box. It's, you know, an easy, very digestible, kind of a sexy, interesting, marketable term that can be really abstracted into anything, but really into nothing. However, that being said, for former Soviet Union musicians, especially those who remember where maybe if they grew up during the collapse and the subsequent transition of the Soviet Union into, you know, the different republics, it's a very chaotic time period, oftentimes marked by conflict and economic instability. Being able to label a set of experiences into something coherent is quite powerful. And it could be a very relieving thing. And it could be, you know, a basis to build, you know, community and solidarity. So in that sense, I think the post-Soviet label has, you know, some teeth to it. But obviously, like, this idea of evoking history where nostalgia is not something exclusive to Soviet Wave. You know, there's a reason why there are so many of these X-Wave musical subgenres, Vaporwave, Retrowave, Synthwave, to just name a few. They're all reacting to the past, or reimagining the past and creating this vision of the past that captures some sort of, maybe not the cultural zeitgeist, but at least an aesthetic of cultural zeitgeist that you can relate to and understand, even if you weren't old enough to experience it for yourself. So yeah, nostalgia is also a very powerful thing.
One of the things that reminds me of hearing you talk about the term post-Soviet and kind of how it's kind of like a double whammy, I guess. It really reminds me of our various discussions about the quote unquote Stonewall uprisings and such. You know, 50 or 60 or however many years of Stonewall pride was a riot, etc. Right? At some point, like, the way that that term becomes, I guess, I'm not sure if popularized is quite the right term, but I'm also not sure if commodified is quite the right term. The way that it just kind of is used so often loses a lot of significant meaning to actually, like, the very impactful sociopolitics of that time period or those events. It's really interesting to think about, like, how, I don't know, I guess is it, as you said before, aestheticism?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's almost like, yeah, it's kind of like defaming politics from aesthetics in a way. And then you just, like, repeat this thing that you hear. And then once it, like, latches onto your brain, it becomes real.
Mm-hmm. I saw this.
Which is how I feel about, like, sort of, like, myths of nostalgia, where, like, you know, the rose-tinted lens.
Neon-tinted, perhaps?
Neon-tinted, yeah.
Neon-tinted lens.
But yeah, I mean, like, in terms of, like, aestheticism, though, it's also not a new thing. Like, even, like, if we're talking about music in the Soviet Union, like, during Soviet times, Soviet punks and Soviet rockers and new wavers, really, people who do this kind of music anywhere, borrowed heavily from a lot of aesthetic movements. They borrowed heavily from, say, Gothic literature and also Romanticism with a capital R, so the Romantic movement. And subsequently with post-Soviet musicians, they're also creating music based on aesthetics and nostalgia and history, but it's Soviet history. And this is a term that I see thrown around a lot. When these musicians talk about their music, they talk about the quiet existentialism and sometimes the banality of daily life. And this is an experience that they've categorized into an experience called post-Sovietism. So that is a phenomena that was made into a phenomenon unto itself. It's really like a constant, like, negotiation between the past and the present, and nostalgia and yearning and dreams and reality and wanting to put a name on that. So Soviet wave, really, where post-Soviet identity is really just a very specific expression of a very universal feeling.
I guess that being said, it seems to make sense that a lot of people in the West have a fascination with that kind of aesthetic. Mm-hmm. Especially when it comes to, you know, some of those comments in the comment section of the Soviet wave playlists that are about, like, a loss of innocence or, like, a time or, like, yearning for a time in which things for them were simpler. Even though
that's not really true.
Yeah, even though it's never true
in any time period. And it does make sense that this is what a lot of the people who are behind this are very young, because it's something that they just never had to experience, or I guess not had to experience, but just never experienced. But yeah, I really want to talk about this, like, intriguing surge of popularity in the West.
But unfortunately, we're hitting the top of the hour on Typically Tuesdays this week. If you're interested in hearing more about the surge of Soviet wave and Soviet aesthetics in the West, tune in to Typically Tuesdays next week on May 24th. Jade and I will be talking all about aestheticism, nostalgia, and more about Soviet wave. For now, here's a little preview.
The Soviet experience is not one that many people outside of it are privy to, especially young people. So why is Soviet wave so popular amongst that demographic? I would actually say that It's exactly because people can't relate on an intrinsic level. So to begin with, because of the Cold War, the messaging you have about the Soviet Union and communism in general is always pretty limited. The content of the messaging, of course, obviously depends on what side you were on, but generally speaking, you're not getting a very nuanced picture of, say, Soviet life. And for young Westerners, say people born in the 90s and later, there wasn't even a Soviet Union to remember, period, right? And chances are, if you don't have family in the former Soviet Union, it's really not something you have a personal connection to. So that brings us to the present. If you're a person disenchanted with your life and you're kind of a history buff and communism and the Soviet Union is kind of like a touchy or a taboo topic where you are, which is America in a lot of cases. And you're curious about Soviet history and the Soviet Union, what do you have to work with?
I hope that enticed you to tune in to next week's Typically Tuesdays. Again, Monday from 3 to 4 on 90.1 FM. We can't do this show without your constant support, so don't forget to follow TT on Instagram. We are at Typically Tuesdays. This week, we want to know if you knew about Soviet Wave before listening to it on today's show. And if you did, when did you first discover it? Let us know through the DMs on Instagram. And if you don't have Instagram, you can email us. We are typicallytuesdays@gmail.com. Thank you so much for tuning in. Don't forget to tune in next week for part two of our Soviet Wave chat. And don't forget to keep tuning in to great CJSF fun. Check out Wandering Rhythms, airing Monday from 12 to 2 with your host Nick as he shares music from all around the world with you. Here's one final song to close off today's show. This is Grandpa's Hourglass by B. Smooth.